As we look in James, we looked at verse number 1, and what we found in verse number 1 was that we see special miseries stalk the wicked rich. In verse 2, we've seen the unmasking of filthy lucre there. And so, and then in verse number 3, what we're going to see is the unused wealth that tends to corrode. So look at verse James 5 and verse 3. James 5 and 3. Your gold and silver is canker. That means it's corroded. And the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh, and it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. And so what James is dealing with, and what he's talking about into our day's time, is talking about currency. You talk about coins, or your personal and your real property. That accounts for wealth. And what we need to understand is that all of these things are subject to damage by rust, by corrosion, by insects. And so, you know, we know insects can do some damage, can't they? You know, if you got your money hanging around and something, you land around, if you got some insects, some of them insects got some teeth. They can, you know, they eat your money up. So in other words, we ought not put our trust and our faith and our security in physical things and in money, because these things is subject to pass away. And so what we see in verse 3 is that the rich man that is spoken of here is putting his faith in gold, putting his faith in silver rather than in God. So how many of us are putting our faith in other things rather than putting our faith in God? And so all the gold and all the silver in the world, we need to understand that it will not save a person from the wrath of God. Money can't buy your way into heaven. And so all the gold and the silver in the world cannot, you know, save you from the wrath of God. But we got to understand, y'all, it's not wrong. It's not wrong to own silver, to have gold, to have things. But the problem comes in how you use it, how you use those things. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 21. Matthew 6, 19 through 21, he says, lay not up for your treasures, yourself treasures upon the earth. Notice, where what? Moth and rust doeth what? Corrupt. We just talked about that. And where thieves break through and steal. But notice, he says, lay up for yourselves treasures where? In heaven, where neither moth nor rust do corrupt, where thieves do not break through and steal. But then he sums it up by saying, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so yes, there's nothing wrong with silver and gold in themselves. And so God established them as blessings from God. Even back in Genesis, he established gold and silver and cattle as true value. And so, because even in fact, silver means redemption. Gold symbolizes the purity of God. Again, silver means redemption. The gold symbolizes the purity of God. And so it tells us that the metal is not bad. It's not bad. It's how we use it, or rather misuse it, that is bad. And so when he talks about the last days, he's talking about the period between Christ's first and his second coming. And so what James does is that James rebukes the rich for living as though Jesus is not coming back. And many times we find that today, right? People are just going on about their business and think, well, you know, I'm going to be here forever. No, you're not. Because the Bible already said one day Jesus is coming back. And so we need to understand that. And so in verse number 4, he begins to deal with the sin of wealth that is acquired by fraud. Look at verse 4. He says in verse 4, "Behold the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." Now, notice what he says. He starts out by saying, "Behold." And when we understand, the word "behold" means to consider. It means to take notice of. So what he's saying is, listen, consider this. Take notice of this. And so it was a term that which was a direct attention to a particular, to a matter to discuss. So James is about to discuss something here in verse 4. So he says, "Behold the hire." Now, when you understand the word "hire," it talks about wages. It was wages. All right? So he said, listen, consider the wages. Of who? The laborers. The laborers were those who worked. And it was a kind of work, when you look at it, it talks about reaping. Have reaped down your fields. What he's talking about, it describes as mowing in the field. And so he said, listen, consider the workers, the wages, how they are working. They are working in the field. They are mowing in the field. But look what you have done. They are out there working hard, you know, but look what you have done. You have done what? Kept back. By what? Fraud. In other words, the rich had gained some of their wealth by oppressing and defrauding the day laborers. They was in a, you working hard, but then set up there, you cheating them out of their money. You're cheating them out of what is rightfully theirs. And guess what? This was a practice that was strictly forbidden in the Old Testament. Well, how do you know that? Well, let's look at some backup scriptures, some support scriptures to help you to understand that. Look over there. Let's go to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19 and verse number 13. Leviticus 19 and verse 13. Notice what he says in verse number 13. "Thou shalt not," what? Defraud. What were they doing in James? They was defrauding, right? And this was a law that was strictly forbidden. "Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning." So in other words, what were they doing? They was taken from who? Those laborers. And it was strictly forbidden. Not only there in Leviticus 19, but we can go over there and you can write this one down in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy 24, verse 14 and 15, we see that. Again, he talks about that in Deuteronomy 14 and verse 15, and 14 and 15. And even, guess what? Not only did that the law of Moses condemned the practice, but understand Jeremiah even condemned the same practice. There in Jeremiah 22 and verse 13. Jeremiah 22, verse 13. Y'all had a lot of scriptures last night, didn't Sister Sharon? You're going to have a lot of scriptures tonight. So look at here. Because we got to give support scriptures. And so we see in Jeremiah 22 and verse 13, Jeremiah condemns it. So not only does Moses condemn it. Not only does Jeremiah condemn it, but the practice was still prevalent when the Old Testament record was complete in Malachi. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 5. So it goes all the way through. It was condemned that you should not defraud the neighbors, the workers. And so what do we see today? Don't we see the same thing? And so although there are many people who have amassed fortune through hard work, there are some people that have that, but they're doing it honestly, and they're doing what they need to do. And so they have a king system business, but it's not the case for everybody. Everybody is not like that. There has never been a day in our country when the crime of fraud because of greed has been practiced. We still see it today. We still see it today. And so we got to understand. But then he says, after he go back to James, he talks about that. Then he says the Lord, Sabbath, that means the Lord of hosts. That's what that means, the Lord of hosts. In other words, you know, you don't have to, don't worry about it. God's going to take care of it. And so because we're going to see some things, you know, they thinking that they are getting by, you know, by doing this, and they thinking that, hey, we getting away with it. But God, you know, you got to understand who God is. You think you're getting away with it, but there's going to come a time. God's going to deal with it because you're going to find out what he's going to tell them. He said, listen, be patient. He's going to tell them later on to be patient because he already knows what's going on. He already knows what is happening. And so what we see here is that what we really see is, you know, the one who hears the cries. God hears the cries. They're crying because of why? They're being cheated. They're being defrauded. And God hears the cries of the defrauded laborers. And don't you know that God hears our cries today? And so we see where the sin comes in right here. This man is so greedy that he has not even paid the wages to the people who is harvesting his field. They're out there thinking that they're going to get paid, but he's robbing them. All right? And so we got to understand, God will not let this go unnoticed. You know, when people mistreat us, don't think that God don't see. God don't know. It don't go unnoticed. God's going to deal with it. But what we have to do is we got to be patient. Because, you know, God don't work on our time. God works on his time. And so what we have to do is that we have to be patient. And so in verse 5, look what happens. James said, listen, you have lived in pleasure on the earth. You've been wanton, you have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. When he talks about live in pleasure, what this leads to, it leads to vice when a person becomes consumed with the pursuit of pleasure. This man has become just, man, he's become consumed of money. You know, of money, because he's robbing them. And so we have to understand, after robbing the workers, accumulating their wealth, now guess what? The rich indulge themselves, man, with, man, just all kind of, you know, rich lifestyles. You know, so they having all of these parties and all of these things. When you look at the word wanton here, it means to live in pleasure. So they're living in pleasure. They're living it up off of who? Off the expense of who? Those that are trying to do what's right. Those that are trying to make a living. Is that happening today? We see that. So the things that James has been talking about, we already see that today. We see this happening on today. And notice what he said. You nourish your hearts as in a day of slaughter. In other words, talking about just like the fattened cattle, you know, to be ready to slaughter. You know, to be killed. Y'all, you know, if you were, you know, you have pigs and cows and stuff, you know, they feed them, get them fat. And then they send them off to do what? Be slaughtered. That's what he's pitching here. That's what he's talking about and dealing with here. And so the rich, James is condemned, have indulged themselves to the limit. So they're throwing these parties. They're just living well. But guess what? They have no regard for the feelings of others. Same thing today. There are folk that just living it up, don't have no feelings. They don't care about what, you know, how you struggling, how you going through something, and they're robbing you. But guess what? These things are not going to go unnoticed with God. God sees everything. All right? So all they're interested in, man, is just, you know, just robbing and defrauding. And so this day of slaughter, you know, it reminds us, you know, speaking of the day of Noah. Y'all remember the day of Noah, what was going on? You remember they were eating, they were drinking, and they didn't have any regard for God. But you know what happened? When the flood came, those that was outside the ark, what happened? All right, they perished. Only one that was saved was the one who was inside. And by the Bible said there was only 8 souls that were saved by water. And that's the lifestyle right here that we see in this. And then he goes on, look what he does. He goes on in verse number 6, he says, listen, you have condemned, look how far it's going. Man, it's going. You have condemned and killed the who? The just. And he doeth not resist you. Now, when he talks about, he's talking about you have condemned. You have killed the just. This describes the next step to in the sinful progression of the rich. What did they start out with? They started out defrauding, right? Look how it's building up. Look at the progression now. Now, you know, hoarding led to what? Fraud. Fraud led to what? Self-indulgence. And now the overindulgence has consumed the rich to the point that they will do anything to sustain their lifestyle. We see that today? And so we have to. But watch this. When you look at the word condemned, condemned comes from a word meaning to sinners. Meaning to sinners. And so the implication is that the rich were using the courts now to commit judicial murder. Now look what it's done. Man, they're going to all kind of extent. They're using the court now to try to get through their evil. And so, you know, back in verse, you know, chapter 2 and verse 8, when you go back and look at that, James chapter 2 and verse 8. And so what was happening was this, is that these wicked rich men were taking poor men to court. They don't have nothing already. But they were taking them to court. You know, at least to the law for purpose of what? They was taking them, their mind frame was about defrauding. Because it goes back, it says, guess what? You're defrauding. You're defrauding those. And so they was using the court. And so the practice has always been characteristic of some wealthy men, right? We see that today. They use the courts. They still try to oppress the poor. And so they're doing all of that. It's nothing new. Wicked rich men are seldom satisfied with the life of ease with their money. They're not satisfied. Man, I got all of this money. But they're not satisfied with, you know, that they can buy whatever they want to buy. And that's what they're doing. But most of them want political power. Oh, we see that. Not only that, they want to run things. But not only run things, but they want to do so not for your benefit, but for their benefit. Don't we see that today? It's happening today. They are only interested in themselves. They're not interested in you. And so they got, you know, they got all of this money, so hey, I'm gonna use it to oppress. And that's what's going on here. And so they try to do this if they can get away with it. And guess what? A lot of them getting away with it. So now you understand, man, that, man, that's frustrating. The poor, the people are working hard, trying to make a living, and look what's happening. No wonder they are crying to God. God help us. God already knows. And so here it is. Verse 7 is right here. Look what he says. Be patient. Now what he does is, again, he begins now to go into another topic. Remember when you see the brethren? All right. So he's starting another topic. Be patient. Therefore, what, brethren? Unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waited for the precious fruit of the earth and had long patience for it until he received the early and latter rain. And so the brethren to whom James was writing, they needed to exercise patience in their dealing with these heartless rich folk. You know, how many times, you know, God is telling us to be patient. But how many times we try to take things in our own hands? Lord, I can't wait on you. And I'm just going to have to deal with this. And guess what? Many times we deal with it the wrong way. When God is telling us, I got you. Don't worry, be patient. It's not going unnoticed. I'm going to take care of the situation. And so they were creating tremendous hardship for the saints because he uses the word therefore. When you look at therefore, it's a term which is commonly used to draw a conclusion. Not only to draw a conclusion, but to connect sentences. What has already transpired? He said, look, therefore be patient. Be patient. Listen, life is difficult enough with just the natural calamities that we face. The hardships that we go through, sickness, accidents, flooding, a lot of calamities that we go through each day, but these are compounded by additional problems generated by cruel and an uncaring world. And that's what he's saying. It's enough they're going through these struggles. But on top of that, they got to deal with these cruel rich folk that's defrauding them. Man, it's enough to just make you want to, you take it in your own hands, right? It's enough. And we see that today. But thus, patience is essential. It's required. And so when you look at the word patient with people, it talks about long suffering. Oh, you're messed up now. Long suffering? That's what he's talking about. We got to be patient. And so we have to understand that. And so James had in mind, you know, the patience of the oppressors. And he's encouraging, he's telling them, be patient. Why? The coming of the Lord. Y'all, here it is. This is it. That's why we be patient. Because what? The Lord is coming. And we all got to stand before God. And we all got to give an account what we've done, whether it's what? Good or whether it's bad. But in the meantime, we got to be patient. And so realizing that there awaits them that Christ returns should motivate us. The trouble don't last always. It ought to motivate us that one day I serve a God that has promised I'm going to take care of it. But in the meantime, I got to do what I need to, and that is be patient. That's what Isaiah said in Isaiah 40. They that what? Wait on the Lord shall what? Renew their strength, Isaiah chapter 40, around about verse 29, all the way through verse 31. And so we have to understand. So now what he does is that now he illustrates this patience. He gives an illustration in verse 7. The latter part of verse 7, he gives an illustration. He says, behold. And so what James does is that James directs the attention to the farmer as it waits the harvest. What happens after the farmer has planted the seed? What do we have to do? Now he's got to what? Be patient. Right? Because now, you know, as he's being patient, he's got to wait to the what? To the harvest. But in the meantime, he got to be patient. And so patience bears up under whatever conditions might dictate during the growing season. Guess what? There might be some rain. There might be some sun. You know, it bears up under all kind of seasons. And so long suffering has a goal for which it strives. So the farmer, he looks to the precious fruits. That's his goal, right? The goal is that I'm going to get a harvest one day. So what's our goal? What do you and I have forward to look, to us to look forward to? All right. That's the goal, right? And we cannot take our eyes off the goal. And as we're focusing on heaven, guess what? There's going to be all kind of stuff that's going to come in our lives. There's going to be all kind of seasons. There's going to be a little rain that's going to come in your life. There's going to be some snow. There's going to be some clouds. There's going to be some sunshine. But through it all, I can sit up there and work through it because my goal is set on heaven. That's why I can be patient, because of the goal. And so when he talks about the early and the latter rain, farmers in Palestine They absolutely depended on two rainy seasons. When you go back, they depended on late fall, and they depended on mid-spring for their crops. So the early rain falls in Israel during October and November. And what it does is it softens the ground for planting. All right? But then the late rain is in falls in March and April. That's immediately before the spring harvest. They look forward to those two things. And so just as the farmer waits patiently for the early rain and to the latter for his crop to ripen, because guess what? You need rain, don't you? But not only do you need rain, but you need some sunshine to go along with it. So they wait patiently. You know, many times, you know, you hear about droughts. That's bad for farmers. Because you know what happens with a drought? Their crops. And so they burn up. So they look forward to rain. But then also, they don't look forward to a lot of rain. Because if it rains too much, y'all see that? So they look forward to the rain, but they look forward to the sunshine to help the crop grow. So what is the bottom line? We as Christians, we need to be patiently waiting for the return of the Lord. Even though we go through many things, the end result is that one day, when it's all said and done, if I have been found faithful, if I have obeyed God, if I have done what God has said, guess what? There's a harvest time. I can hear him say, well done. Thy good and faithful servant, thou have been faithful over a few things. Come and I make you ruler over many. And so we should not get impatient when we plant the seed, the word of God. You know, when we plant the word of God in somebody's heart, we shouldn't say up there, man, why can't they see that? Why don't they obey it? Our job is to plant the seed and water it. But it's God's job to give the increase. And guess what? We might plant the seed and we might not see the results. But the seed has been planted. And so we have to wait patiently. It takes time for it to take hold and produce fruit. And so in verse 8, we'll be picking up verse 8, be ye also patient, our time is running out. Establish your hearts, he says, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. What James does is he repeats the command that he just said in the earlier verse to be patient. Be patient, because alongside patience, inspiration adds an established heart. And what that means is it means to strengthen. It means to make firm. It means to fix. And so James, what he's doing is he's encouraging those who are about to collapse under the weight of persecution, he's saying, strengthen your heart with the hope of the second coming. All right? So we'll put our mark on there. We'll begin with verse 9, not willing, on next week. But also, just keep in mind, I know when we get to around about verse 13 and 14, especially verse 14, people get so hung up on the oil, and that's been the problem. People get hung up on the oil that they miss the Lord, and that's what we're going to deal with when we get to verse 14. That we get caught up with the oil. Oil can't do nothing, but the Lord can. And so we're going, when we get there, just read up ahead, and when we get there, hope it be a blessing to each of you. Thank you again for your attention. Prayer requests on